I'm Caitlin, and today we have Blair Ferguson here again for another oral history. Tell us a bit about what you're going to be talking today.
I'll give some background information. Mm-hmm. So World War II happened, the fall of France, and then the Battle of Britain. So the British Air Force was severely depleted of air crew. They couldn't feed their own population, so they couldn't set up schools to train people. So they looked at Canada, that was vast, had tons of food, and so they set up a thing called the British Commonwealth Air Training Plan. And so Fingal, just east of here, was chosen to be a bombing and gunnery school. So bomb aimer, where Americans call them bombardiers, but we call them bomb aimers. They were trained in a plane called a Bolingbroke. And then the air gunner students were in a plane called a Fairey Battle that had a mid-upper turret, and the student would fire that machine gun. There was another plane called a Lysander, and its job was to tow a drogue. And so a drogue was a 12-foot long, 3-foot diameter silk sock. And it was let out by a long cable. And the bullets, each student had a different color. So they dipped the bullets into different colored wax. And then when it went through the drogue, it would leave like a little red ring or a blue ring or whatever. So I'm going to talk about one of those planes, the Lysander. There was an accident, and they never could figure out why, and the only person who saw it was Reg Miller when he was 6 years old. So that's kind of what I'm going to talk about.
Wow. I guess I've got so many questions, but I guess we'll just jump into it.
Okay, yeah. Reg Miller, like I said, they had a farm just on the border between Dunwich and Aldeburgh. So there were floating targets out in the lake where the bomb aimers would drop practice bombs and hit this triangle floating wood thing. And lots of times they just did like gunnery runs over the lake because there was nothing. You know, they weren't disturbing anybody, you know, the farmers and just people in general didn't want planes flying over them with machine guns going off. So they always went over the lake, not always, often. So when was it? So on May 23rd, 1942, Reg is 6 years old and he's playing on the cliff bank of their farm. And he hears planes, but he hears planes every day. He doesn't even fizz on him anymore, except this one day November 23rd, he hears a plane making a strange noise, and so he kind of goes over the cliff bank and looks up, and as he looks up, he just gets there in time to see this Lysander fly into the lake in flames. And so he ran home and told his dad, and his dad didn't believe him. And so he finally convinced him to come out, and all that was left was the smoke trail. So his dad went down to Eagle because there was a fishery there, and he told them what happened. And one of the fish tugs went out to where the spot was to see if there was people or whatever. But the only thing they could find was a tire because it was full of air, so it would float. They looked around, they sent word to Port Stanley. There was a rescue boat from the Royal Canadian Air Force there, and it took off and came out and looked around, and they couldn't find anything. So the plane, the drogue, it was flown by a very experienced pilot, and he was from Britain, so he was in the Royal Air Force. What was his name? So his last name was Gray, and so, you know, they couldn't figure out this guy had thousands of hours of flying time, so it's not like he would have made a mistake. So from Toronto, number one air training command came down and actually interviewed 6-year-old Reg, because he was the only person who saw it. So they interviewed him and asked him all kinds of questions, and they wanted to know if the fairy battle that would shoot at the SOC, the drogue, was anywhere in the vicinity, because they thought maybe the plane got hit by accident. And he said, no, it wasn't anywhere near. It was just that plane, and it just had the drogue out and went into the lake. They couldn't figure it out. They couldn't find anybody. There was just two crews, the pilot, and then there would have been a guy in the very end tail section. And his job was to let the drogue out. So it was on a big thick cable, and he would wind it out on a winch and then wind it back in. And so he was stuck right down in that tight spot. They thought for sure the pilot could have gotten out or whatever, right? But the fact that it was on fire as well, it didn't make any sense. So they did an investigation, and it was just inconclusive. You know, it was just a mystery type of thing. So in April of 1943, so quite a few months later, part of a body washes up on the beach in Port Bruce, which is, 30 kilometers east of here. It was unidentifiable. It had been in the water for quite some time, and it was only partial body, I think just the torso. But they decided that it was the pilot Gray, because it had a blue Air Force uniform on, and it was a darker blue than the Canadian ones, and it was a finer material. British uniforms were like made out of like a twill type of thing, and Canadian uniforms were wool. So they figured there was no other accidents in the lake, because there was other training schools along the lakes and stuff like that, but there was nobody unaccounted for. So they took this torso and they figured it was Gray. And then in July, so a couple of months later, the lower part of a body washes up on shore again in the Port Bruce area, a little bit closer. It had blue pants on, so they just assumed this is Gray. So they held a funeral, and he was from Suffolk, England. And he had a wife and a child, like a little boy, at the time he was like 3 years old, and they were living in St. Thomas. They held a funeral, and they buried him in the Dutton Cemetery at Fairview. There's a Canadian War Graves Commission white military tombstone there, and it says, Pilot Gray. But the guy in the back, his last name was Hilchey, he'd never been found. It made sense that he would be, like, the pilot would wash out, the doors would fly open, and the waves would rush through, and eventually he broke apart and floated away. But they got the guy operating the drogue, he was stuck in this little compartment where you basically had your knees up against your chest, and so he was wedged in there. So it makes sense that he wouldn't come out. And so as far as, the military, that was it, right? They he was gone and no known body. So they just listed his name at a memorial wall in Ottawa. And it just says grave unknown. So I had, I'm a military buff kind of guy, and so I've heard of the story for years. And as time went on, in the early 2000s, somebody told me that they could see the outline of a plane on their fish sonar, right? In about the right area. It's about a mile and a half out, just east of Eagle. And so they drove over this spot and they could see an outline of a plane. So I was excited because, I contacted the Canadian War Graves Commission and told them the story I just told you. And I said, there's a airman there and, he has no known grave. That is his grave.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, absolutely. So they came down with scuba guys and everything. And for sure, you can see the outline of a plane on sonar, but you can't find it because it's in the silt. But it's the silt's light and fluffy enough that the sonar will penetrate it, but they can't touch it. And so if they could find it, they would have attached a wreath to it with Hilchey's name on it and the date of his death, and it would be marked as a Canadian war grave, and so therefore you had to leave it alone, right? And that was my objective, right? Because, as soon as somebody says, oh, we found a plane, and there'd be interest, not necessarily for the right reasons, I guess. And so I wanted that to become a Canadian war grave. But they couldn't lay their hands on it, and so they can't list it as a Canadian war grave because there's nothing to attach that wreath to. So they kind of left it at that. The lake's continuously changing, right? Mm-hmm. The depths are continuously changing. It washes out and washes in. So my hopes is that one day there'll be enough silt washed away that the plane will be able to be found and they will be able to attach a wreath to it. They didn't close the case, they just kind of left it open. And the plane was made of aluminum, so it wouldn't rot, it wouldn't rust. It will be there for all eternity, but it would be nice to have it marked as a war grave.
How long ago was it that they
died? They came out about 13, 14 years ago. They came from Ottawa, and they spent, I got to give them credit. They went over and over and dove. And they spent a good, 5 or 6 days trying to find this thing, right? And he is the only one from Number 4 Bombing Gunner School in Fingal there was quite a few fatalities there, because they were just kids. They were 18 year old for most of the part. And, they just don't know. But he's the only one who's unaccounted for. So again, it'd be nice to have him accounted for.
And kind of like have that closure for the relatives and stuff too.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and along with that, about 18 years ago, I was giving a talk on Number 4 Bomb and Gunnery School. And I mentioned about this story and other things. And then after, I wrote a book about Number 4 Bombing Gunner School. And So I was selling those books and I was signing it, and a guy came up and he said, I want to show you the photograph. And so he showed me a photograph, and it was a woman and a small child standing beside a gravestone. And he said, that's me, the little boy, and my father was Gray, the pilot.
Wow.
And so, and he said, you know, thank you so much. I never knew really what happened. I just knew that the plane crashed, and so that was kind of neat. It was, you know, kind of gave more purpose, I guess, to my talk than just for, you know, average knowledge or whatever. It, you know, it brought this guy, I guess, closure, right? Because he knew exactly what happened to his dad.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you're right. You know, it'd be nice to have that same closure for Hilchi, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of speculation, and one thing that they thought about, again, Hilchi was, you know, like 19, 20 years old, is boring and stuck in the back of the plane. He can't talk to the pilot because he's up, they don't have the radio system or anything. So there's a thought that he might have been playing around with the flare gun. Every plane had a flare gun in case you got in trouble, you would shoot a flare up, right? So if he was playing with that flare gun and it happened to go off, it would start the plane on fire.
Yeah.
Right? So, and it would also, the pilot, you know, with the gun going off and flames and everything, he would lose control. So that was one thought. And not to blame anything on Hilchi or anything, he was a young kid, and you know, what young guy doesn't want to hold a gun and look at it, and right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if it accidentally discharged. But again, that was just speculation.
Right.
So, yeah. So, you know, like I said, that's kind of the story in a nutshell. It was amazing. I talked to Reg Miller, again, 18 years ago or whatever, and he told me the story. And so it was pretty amazing to, it, you know, to hear this guy talking about, you know, this this incredible experience. And, you know, and to him it was, you know, just, it seemed like yesterday, right? He was very sharp and knew all about it, and, you know, gave a lot more details than I did, you know, like he even talked about what he was doing and, you know, what he was looking for out there and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So
yeah.
It was obviously stuck in his head. So.
Yeah, what an experience too for a six-year-old to, you know, not only see that, but also, you know, have a talk with like the lead people and
them
trying to investigate the situation, and him being the only one who's seen it, and he's 6 years old and he's the only one who can give all the information. Like,
yeah,
I can't imagine.
Well, and at that time, I mean, somebody coming from Toronto was like coming from another planet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, very few people ever even left Dunwich, you know? His parents wouldn't have had a car or anything like that, right? And even if they did, you couldn't, nobody traveled that far anyways. Yeah, it would have been something else, that's for sure. You know,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. So, but yeah, the only thing they ever found was that tire. That's the only thing that ever.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, and yeah, like I said, it'd be nice to be able to find it and have it listed as a war grave for no other reason other than to give the family closure. And, you know, I mean, he had a mother and he had brothers and sisters and they would have kids. And so, I mean, obviously his siblings would be gone probably now. There's very few people who were of serving age in World War II left, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but I mean, there is family out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be nice, especially like even just the last few years, the lake, like the water levels and everything have changed so much. It'd be interesting to see, like, hopefully in the near future they can get their hands on it and, you know, mark it as a war grave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it, you know, it, I always thought it'd be a great documentary.
Yeah,
too,
exactly.
Right? Like, you know, the whole story of Reg Miller and you know, I can see it being something that they would put on the History Channel. And
yeah, the mystery surrounding it as well, and
right,
how
yeah.
long it's just been, nobody knew it was there. It's really cool. Well, it's interesting that, like, just a regular fishing boat caught it on their radar.
Yeah, it was just some guys out perch fishing and, you know, in like a 18-foot boat, and their fish finder basically did the outline of a plane.
Was it, like, deep in that section? Like, do you know the depth?
At that time, I don't know, but I mean, they were only in like, you know, 8-10 feet of water when they saw it on their sonar.
Wow.
What it was in the 40s, I don't know. You know, you would think that, I'm just trying to think, it would have been deeper, I think, because there was, there was a fishery in Eagle, where the water intake plant is now. There was a fishery at Plum Point, which is that way.
Yeah.
And I mean, you couldn't even get a fish tug in around Plum Point now, right?
Yeah.
Because there's like, it's like 4 feet of water. So I would imagine that it was quite a bit deeper at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. I feel like if it was a lot shallower too back then, they would have done more when trying to see where the plane was initially.
Yeah, because if it was shallow enough, I mean, somebody could have just swam down
exactly,
there.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. But I never thought about that. You know, why they knew where it went in, and yet they never. But again, if it was deeper water, if it was, you know, 14 feet or 15 feet of water or whatever, it'd be difficult. It's not like they had scuba guys or anything around, right? So, it would be difficult to swim down to it. And even if they did, that was another problem that the War Graves Commission had, is that it couldn't see anything. The guys diving, it was just like swimming in the dark.
Yeah.
Because it's so murky, and as soon as they touch the bottom, there's, you know, feet and feet of this very, very fine silt, right? And as soon as they touch it, it just, boom. And so they would, like they said, they were just feeling around basically with their hands, you know, trying to touch something. They couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the lake would have been clearer back then or whatever, but you know, it's amazing that nobody, I mean, it would have taken a long time for it to be buried. It's not like it would have been buried overnight.
Right.
And so with all those fish tugs around, they used to drag net. I don't believe they can do that anymore, but it was like a big net and a hoop, and they would drag it along the bottom and catch everything, right? You would have thought that it would have got snagged on the plane, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they've found shipwrecks further in the lake in very deep water, like, you know, 30 feet of water. And those drag nets have snagged on railings of boats and stuff like that. So it's amazing that it's never been found, I guess.
Yeah.